Pour something flammable into your glass. This is Jada Gamercast. My name is Lion. With me, as always, is Nathan. Nathan, I'm drinking scotch. It's the scotch I got from that gentleman at Adepticon whose name I don't remember. Probably Jeff. I'm just going to say, odds are Jeff is a good call. What are you drinking tonight, Nathan?
Well, I reffed a game last weekend with a ref who came up from Montana and brought me more of my delicious Occulto beer. So I'm back on that train. I've also been drinking most afternoons where it's just like, well, it's 12:30. I just got off my conference call. I love working from home. Because it's just tasty and delicious.
Man, if only. I have to, like, hide my alcohol at work.
It's harder.
Right.
All right, you guys are listening to...
Just harder.
Yeah, exactly. It's not impossible. I work in a cubicle, man. Most of the time people don't see me except for the person across from me, and I'm their boss. So they couldn't say shit if they wanted to, is what I'm trying to get at.
Or they're fired.
Exactly. All right, you guys listen to Jada Gamercast. Let's talk a little bit about what we did this week in hobby. For me, it was a lot of failed attempts at gaming. I was trying to get a game of Relic Knights in, failed. I was trying to get a game of Firestorm or Planetfall in, failed. I was even trying to get some online D&D going, which wasn't even D&D, but we'll talk about it a little bit, which also failed.
Okay.
I may as well just go right into it. I ended up playing a game of Pathfinder over Roll20 with a group of people that I'm still partially in touch with, but the Blackhearts clan.
From, oh, Jesus.
You know them from Lineage. I've known them for years from various games.
Yes, I do know them from Lineage.
Old SK was the DM. And let's just say he was inexperienced. It was.
So it's like when he's a guild master.
It was 2.5 hours when we fought a single giant scorpion. It was really, really unsafe.
Wow.
But it brought up this funny conversation that I had with him before we were starting, saying like, oh yeah, I'll play. Like, I kind of know what I'm doing. I've played Pathfinder before, but it was maybe like 12 years ago. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I get it. It's very similar to 3.5 D&D, 3.5 plus AD&D, whatever you want to call it. And, you know, I said, well, right now what I'm doing is I'm running 5th edition D&D campaigns for like 2 or 3 different groups right now out of my basement, right? And I'm either a DM or a player, but generally I'm DMing. And he goes, oh, yeah, 5th edition D&D, and you know the voice. And that 5th edition D&D ain't even as good as... I mean, they basically just turned everything backwards. You know, I mean, they took all the substance out of the game and they just made everything too simple. So basically, I'd say to him, like, okay, but, like, give me an example of where that is really important to gameplay. So he says, okay, well, like, you know, survival. You know, just because you have a high rating for survival doesn't mean that, like, you know everything about hunting or skinning or swimming or fishing or this, that, and the other thing. I said, okay, but those are all kind of subsets of survival, though. And he says, yeah. And I said, and they use the same modifier as survival. He says, yeah, but you can have separate modifiers in them. I said, okay, I guess I understand that to an extent, but, like, what if you get into a situation where, you know, like it in my mind, it's up to the DM to just set the difficulty according to that person's skill, right? So, yeah, they don't have proficiency in skinning, so you just make the difficulty higher. And he's like, oh, no, that's just, you know, you don't do that shit. So, anyways, we kill the giant scorpion.
Boy, have I not missed hearing him speak for the last few years.
Hey, listen, I'm still on good terms with him just because it's a novelty. I find him very entertaining. But... basically, what it came down to was we had killed the giant scorpion, and I was like, right, so I want to cut it open. I want to cut into its venom sacs, and I want to, like, coat my arrows with venom. And he's like, oh, okay, do you have, like, potions or alchemy or, like, do you have, you know, like, skinning or this, that, or the other? Like, he had a bunch of different things he was asking if I have, and I was like, nope, just survival. And it's relatively high because I'm a ranger. So, you know. And he's like, okay, so you don't have this or this. I'm like, no, but I still want to try to do it. And he's like, all right, we'll just roll your survival and I'll just make the difficulty higher. And I'm sitting there going like, that's what I said earlier. You know?
You, like, it was just, son of a bitch.
All it does is remind me how much I enjoy 5th edition and the simplicity and the fun of it, as opposed to spending hours and hours fucking with like your sheet and fucking with like right. this skill or that skill. Yeah. So what about you?
Oh, this week in hobby, let's see. I played some games of Wild West Exodus before going to Provost. I did a shitload of painting. I got five lawmen done for Wild West Exodus. I've finished up, started and finished up my Malifaux Master after building that box set. And then this weekend was capped off by going to Provost for Provocon. Sorry, I had to stop because I opened a new beer and it was about to overflow. So we had to
take care of that
shit. We had to take care of that shit because I was like, uh-oh, I'm about to make a mess.
Were you expecting a drum roll? Slurp. I didn't know if I was supposed to chime in.
Right? No, that was literally just not getting...
It was a panic pause.
Beer foam. Yeah, it was panic pause. You know, went up to Provost for Provocon, ended up playing a bunch more games of Wild West Exodus, got a game of War Machine in. You know, played some Super Dungeon Explorer, Forgotten King, all co-op editions. So that's the version of the game. It's the newest expansion where they poorly created mechanics for the monsters to function very zombicide-ish, where they would just function automatically and you don't have a player controlling it and trying to kill the party like in Descent.
Mm-hmm.
Very poorly executed, probably my least favorite board game I've played in a very long time, which is unfortunate because, you know, like, this is going to sound familiar after that intro game of Wild West Exodus, the models are so nice. Like, Super Dungeon Explorer has such nice models that I want to like it as a game, I just don't. And played some Galaxy Trucker, you know, basically just hung out all weekend playing games. With like 8 hours of driving, four there and four back. It's Provost. It's not close.
It's a ways away. Correct.
Yes.
All right. So let's move on to the weekly listener poll question that we had for you guys this week was, how much time would you expect a skirmish game to take to play? And with 56% of the vote, you guys said about an hour. About an hour generally is what's accepted for a skirmish game in terms of the people who've answered this poll. 22% said 90 minutes, 18% said 45 minutes, and one whole person said 30 minutes. One asshole commented on the poll, but he did it just to hear my voice. So I'm going to read his comment.
All right.
So Rock Yeti says, I don't actually have anything to say. I just felt like trolling Lang by commenting on the poll and to hear his sweet, sexy voice purr my comment through my Bluetooth speakers.
Dude, he is furiously masturbating right now. Just furiously masturbating.
Are you shitting me? That's his new ringtone. Ian says, tabletop skirmish about 90 minutes. That's enough time to get in a good game with some back and forth. It's not cripplingly long for a weeknight. Pants skirmish, 10 minutes tops. Pants skirmish? Interesting. Sometimes you just get tired and want to sleep. All right.
Sure.
Yeah. You know what? My vote here was 90 minutes.
Mm.
I think 90 minutes is perfectly reasonable for a skirmish game. You can get two or three in a night. You can have two or three people over and take turns, and everybody gets to play, and everybody has a good time. So I think 90 minutes is generally okay. I think 60 minutes, it falls within that kind of weird realm of sometimes it's a half-hour game, sometimes it's a 90 minutes game, you know?
Well, I was going to say, I voted 60 minutes because for me, I find that it's either 45 or it's 60 up to about 90. Like, I find the threshold is, once you hit 2 hours, it feels like a long fucking game. And that's where it's just like, God, why am I still playing this? Starts to come in as a factor.
There you go. You know? All right. So we did have some other comments here. I'm going to read those real quick. Andrew said, we've started playing this... this is not a test at the local club. Our first game took about an hour while we got used to the rules, but they're now down to about 30 to 45 minutes. This gives us enough time to get 2 to 3 games in during a club meet with some time between for sorting out post-game results and talking shit. I think talking shit is really important.
Yeah, it is absolutely the most important part of a game.
Right, and it requires a large quantity of the setup time as well as the follow-up time between games, right? I think one of the most important aspects of talking shit, and we talked about this way, way, way back, way, way, way back, is mixing in a certain amount of, like, bold-faced shit talk where you're just like, listen, dude, you're terrible. I don't know why you play this game. and like really passive aggressive shit talk where it's just like, I mean, you could be doing better, right? Like you got to mix it in. You got to start hard and like bring it back and like soften them up and then hit them hard again. Right. Or, you know, you could go the other way around. Either like build to you're a pile of shit. If you're human garbage, you know, things of that nature. But yes, I think shit talking is very important. Alex Mann says, I think around an hour is about ideal. Stretching out to 90 minutes plus, I'd start to feel like I could have played something meatier. If you can reliably complete the game in under 60 minutes, then I also think it would have a good place as a filler if a game, if a normal game ends unexpectedly early, as once did a Zombicide where we were suddenly overwhelmed by a couple of extra zombie activations and our survivors rapidly.
That is always the worst where you're like, all right, listen, the zombies are formulaic. They're going to move one square. We're two squares away. Like, we're a square away, so they'll move in. And then it's fine because we're just going to murder them with all of our chainsaws. And then you flip that. All walkers get another activation. You're like, and the three of us were torn limb from limb. All right. Fucking Zombicide. Because, yeah. Like, every now and then, you're like, I've got this game on lock. Like, we've got this handled. We're totally going to. And then they get the extra activation card. You're like, oh, shit.
So there you go, game designers. If you're listening to the show, and obviously you are, 60 minutes is the vote with 90 minutes as a follow-up, the runner-up there. If that's what you're building for, people should generally assume that your game is a skirmish game. All right, thanks to everyone who voted on the weekly listener poll. You can find those at jdgamercast.com. We'll have another question for you at the end of the show, of course, if you remember. So this brings us to the model of the week. And there is no other model to talk about on the planet other than this model right now.
Ugh.
The Celestent hyphen Primarch. I mean, Prime.
Yes. Well, again, Prime. Broken marriage.
Correct. I made a post about this when Maddie brought it to my attention, and I will quote Maddie again by saying, what the actual fuck? This model is a catastrophe.
Yes.
It really is. It is the culmination of everything we hate in modeling. And yes. I mean that. I genuinely mean that. There's not a single part of this model that I find attractive or like in any way, shape, or form. It is a fucking mess.
Look, Lang, stop the impossible standards of beauty. All models are beautiful.
God.
Except this one. Even this one is
this
horrendous.
Is so bad. And I mean, a lot of people were saying, like, oh, I think it's really cool. It'd be cool. It's like a centerpiece for your army. But no. No, it's
then
terrible.
You'd have to transport it. No, okay. So, I mean, here's one of the things, because as will happen with all groups of three or more gamers, it will eventually come to GW bashing. It's
correct.
Just an inevitability. You cannot stop it. It is like internet arguments eventually leading to Hitler. It's it's a certainty. So one of the things that was actually mentioned by someone, because, you know, you sarcastically drop the "they make the world's greatest miniatures" line,
mm-hmm.
Because they somehow still believe it despite releasing garbage like this. And then someone actually said, you know, I really don't like Games Workshop models. Like they're just too fucking ugly. And this model embodies that entire sentiment because it got onto a conversation where we were just talking about how Games Workshop stopped making cool, subdued models that could kind of stand on their own feet because the aesthetic was interesting and a nice paint job would make them pop. And they basically started
feet, and this guy's like, fucking flying.
Fucking flying. Woo! It works. It totally works. It's got layers. Oh. But like, it's a metaphor. Fuck.
Oh my God.
Keep up. No, but like I said, it's just one. It was just a really interesting conversation because basically, Games Workshop now is just producing the miniature equivalent of 80s van art. And that's every single fucking thing they do. It's gotta be some fucking asshole with a goddamn white lion next to it in the star background. It's just like, everything is so fucking over the top that Games Workshop is just doing this because we can bullshit. So I mean,
I think they genuinely think it's cool. Right? Like, these are the guys who probably look at 80s vans driving down the street and they go, oh, that's fucking sweet, man.
Oh,
and
man,
like,
if I didn't work for Workshop and they actually paid me money to do my job, I would buy that van in an instant.
All right, listen. I'm going to.
Are we actually going to talk about the model?
I want to talk about it. I want to talk about the things that just it blows my mind that this is happening. So there's the swirling maelstrom of celestial sensors that are apparently keeping him aloft that then blur into his lower cloak, let's say apron, and butt apron. There you go. So he's got a cape. He's got a butt apron. The cape is extra long. His wings, I've said it before in the comment, they look like fucking butterfly wings. They look so weird.
No, they don't even look like butterfly wings because butterfly wings are not that pointy.
Well, clearly. No. I mean the shape of them.
Yes, because I was going to say, you can't see the spikes because they painted it pure white.
Right.
I think this paint job is specifically the heavy metal painter's cry for help. Because he knew it would be a white background. So he painted the stupidest parts of the wings in a color to camouflage them with almost no highlights whatsoever.
Like, yeah, when you rotate it.
Yeah, when you rotate it, you kind of see the hint of the spikes. But it is quite clear that he is painting them intentionally to blend into the background.
Oh, and they go a ways up. That's the thing.
Try to save this model. But you can't. You can't save a train wreck.
He's got Galmaraz. Okay, fine. But the fact that this is essentially the Celestent Prime, which, as I alluded to earlier, hyphen Prime, is essentially them saying, like, here's your Primarch. It's a gaudy pile of shit. It's a total mess. There's nothing about it that I like, because when we talk about Warhammer and we talk about Warhammer 40K and it's like, war is brutal, war is gritty, right? Like, if you ever read, like, Dan Abnett's Riders of the Dead, phenomenal book, is like this really gritty look at like the Warhammer world and the war and all that kind of stuff and what the frontline troops look like and stuff like that. This is not any of that. It's not gritty. He doesn't look dangerous. He doesn't look like
he's... Like I said, it's 80s van art. He has a lion for a fucking chest. A lion
face.
Well,
we've seen that before, but again, it's repeated over and over again. But that's what bugs me, is it's lost all of the grittiness that you would have got out of it. Everything is either cartoonish or over-the-top cartoonish, where he's got a demon imbued into his shin guard, which is still the saddest thing ever. But in general,
that's
like,
what happens when you don't study and get good grades, demons.
No, it's just, it's terrible. It really is terrible. Now, am I going to say that you're an idiot for liking it? No. I think in general, if this is something that you like, fine, go for it, more power to you. But to me, this is everything that is the opposite of Warhammer in my mind.
Well,
this over-the-top, sanguineous, you know, one-in-a-million type thing, but instead of one-in-a-million, it's your entire army is sanguineous.
Well, yeah, I mean, absolutely. And I mean, I think that was actually a good point, is in the Warhammer Fantasy Battles universe, yes, there were special characters. Of course, there was Archaon. Of course, there was Karl Franz. But when the fuck did you ever see anybody take them? You rarely did. Instead, you got, like, generic General of the Empire number 613, which was great because it still gave the feeling that war was gritty and that everyone was expendable, whereas this guy is literally being touted as a god. But for me, I mentioned the wings. I don't even want to talk about the wings because, again, I think the toothpick aesthetic is stupid as shit.
It's really dumb.
But let's just talk about every single modeling sin this thing is committing. So they basically decided that the ghosts from Nagash that were super cool, that were fluffy, because Nagash literally has ghosts that are servants to him.
Correct.
At all times. So it totally fit that model. They're like, we'll start with those, but we'll take out the arms and the faces, and it'll just be comet bullshit. They put in way too many of those sensors because they realized that it was just too bland. Just being indeterminate shape sense, like swirly shit. We've got the lion aesthetic. There are 10 comets of Sigmar on his wings alone. That's not counting the 4 on his cape. And, you know, like, it's just like, it's so fucking over the top. We have sculpted fire. How many fucking times do we have to talk about how sculpted fire looks like shit?
It looks stupid. It always looks stupid.
It always looks bad. You talked about the cape blending into the swirly morass, which we all know is so that the model will stand, but instead of doing something stupid like that, why didn't you maybe sculpt a better model, like a better solution than just saying, eh, fuck it, his butt apron turns into the swirly shit. He farts himself up the sky, and that's all it is.
Well, who's he going to fight, right? Like, everyone's so far below, like, he couldn't even swing Gulmaraz down.
According to the rules of Age of Sigmar, unless he has, I would guess, a 5 or so inch
correct
reach, like, combat range, he can never swing Gulmaraz.
He can't hit anybody. According to Age of Sigmar rules, he's too far away to hit anybody.
Because this is actually, what's so funny about this is I remember when we first read those rules, one of the people on our page was just like, so why don't I just put every model on a flying stand so they can't get hit, and I'll just build a shooting list? And I was like, yeah, you could absolutely do that. And then Games Workshop's like, that's a good fucking idea.
100% legit.
Let's just sculpt this guy. Like, watch, yes, he has Gulmaraz. It's purely decorative because that fucking rod in the other hand probably throws, like, strength 10. Oh, there's no strength. Wounds on 2 plus fireballs. So it's just like, no. This way I never get into combat, and it's fine.
Maybe he can shoot the needles out of his wings like Archangel.
I don't know. But listen,
fuck.
It's just every single modeling sin. Yes,
bucks,
and $100.
People. Pick it up. Don't buy groceries, and so on and so forth. Oh, God.
it's such a piece of shit.
So bad. All right. So let's move on to the main topic of today's show, which is no such thing. Basically, it's been very dry. I'm going to be perfectly honest with you guys. It's been very dry lately, and we do get a lot of questions from you guys on a really regular basis, but a lot of times we don't get a chance to answer them. So every once in a while, what we like to do is make a post on the Facebook page saying, hey, everybody, go ahead and post us your questions. We're currently recording live. There is a shit ton of questions right now, which is amazing. I'm very happy about that. And we are just going to answer them as we record it. So this is kind of a show that is driven by you. We've got some follow-up stuff at the end. We're going to read an email and talk about a stupidity check. It's going to be great. But hey, let's dive right into this shit, Nathan. We're going to go to the question at the top. That comes from frequent co-host Maddie. He says, if you guys were able to choose a game for the other to start, what would it be? So for me, honestly, it's hard because generally you and I are always starting games in tandem. Mm-hmm. However, you've been picking up a lot more games of a certain style that I'm not necessarily into, and I've been picking up games of a style that you're not necessarily into.
Yes.
Honestly, it would either be Mercs, or it would be... I think Dice Masters we would also have a lot of fun with in general, I think it's also a game that you would fucking hate.
I expected you to answer Dice Masters.
Well, just because Dice Masters is a lot of fun. Like, it is generally a fun game, but it doesn't seem like it would be a fun game. But no, I think Mercs was the one that I was hoping that we would get into and be able to play. Again, we're not going to reiterate the reasons why we didn't pick it up. But I mean, like, I think eventually we'll probably get there. Hopefully, it sounds like the game's getting bigger.
I was going to say, eventually they'll release their 2.0 rules. And I think that that's the big game changer, is when we were looking at the Adepticon deals, they were pushing rule books on us that they themselves knew in 6 months were worthless. And yeah. I think that was the biggest stumbling block. Because if they had just slashed like $50 off of the price and then said, we're giving rule books to anyone that buys these bundles,
mm-hmm.
I think that would have been a very different story of the do we get into Mercs or not. But yeah, once 2.0 lands, I think that the game has a higher likelihood of me getting excited about it. I don't know. I'm still afraid of you and Maddie playing it to death and just being like, the game's not fun now.
Trust me, I get it, right? But that was the question. So for games that you wish I would start, what would it be?
Honestly, right now my muse is Wild West Exodus. I would love if you started it. I think it's going to be a lot of fun just from playing our games at Provocon. I know that Scotty's kind of in whole ham, as is Jonathan the Boreal Wong, because,
Prodigy.
It's just, I love you, John. You are just very easy to get into new games. but I love that because it means that when you and I are just like, hey, this game seems super obscure and hipster. I'ma play it. You're with me. And it works. But no, like I said, Wild West Exodus. I've played about 6 or 7 games now. And I'm really, like, every single game, I'm just kind of blown away a little bit more by the depth and the nuance of the game system, despite all of the mechanics being incredibly straightforward and easy to play. Also, by the time this podcast goes live, Wild West Exodus is giving its rules away on their website. So,
oh, fancy.
Anyone can kind of check it out effective, I think, some point the Monday this goes live, so August 31st. So,
yeah, the models were really nice outside of the intro game, the notorious intro game.
I
love the models, and I think the game has a great following. So, I mean, I could totally see myself getting into it. It's just it's one of those things that is lower on my list. All right, moving on to the next question here. Marcus Christian, he says, favorite board game, card game, and why? So I think Nathan and I will probably both agree on this. Favorite board game is Galaxy Trucker.
Yep, hands down.
Galaxy Trucker is just the most bananas fun board game that you can play for like 3.5 hours, right? Like, it's not a game of Risk or Twilight Imperium where it's like, you have to book a whole day.
Well, but even
but
then, if you're only doing three rounds, it's like 90 minutes to 2 hours. Like, it kind of hits that sweet spot, but it's frantic. You're always working. You're always doing stuff. Yeah.
Basically three different games, right? Like, there's the setup game where it's like, oh, here's your ship and here's what you're doing. And then it's the token flipping game. One hand on the table, one at a time.
You basically play Carcassonne.
Right. And then it's the go look at the other person's ship game and try to find out where they fucked up. And then it's the actually do your Galaxy Trucker mission part, right? Like, it feels like so much happens when you play that game. So it is absolutely my favorite.
Well, yeah, and again, Terry and I have started to purge our board game collection using the Galaxy Trucker metric of fun. If it's not as fun or more than Galaxy Trucker, it's not worth our time.
I think that's a solid metric, I'm not going to lie. My favorite card game, to be honest with you, I mean, I play a decent amount of card games, but my favorite card game right now is Hearthstone. Mm. It's not like an actual like card game, but it basically follows that collectible card game format. If I had to pick it like a favorite card game, outside of that, it would be
Legend of the Five Rings.
Oh my God, fuck no. Probably just Magic. I think Magic is actually a really fun card game. I don't play it a lot. I just play it randomly every once in a while. I'll sit down and play like 4 or 5 games with somebody. But in general, like, I played a lot of Magic online. But no, I like Hearthstone quite a bit.
I do not play card games.
I know you don't. All right, Marcus, he also asked a couple other questions. So we're going to shotgun through Marcus's questions here. Age of Sigmar, great game or the greatest game?
I love the Colbert reference. Moving on.
Awesome. How much do you care about painted models? Okay, this is a bit of a loaded question, because I've played with unpainted models, you've played with unpainted models, it happens. In general, painted models are only important in a setting where you're playing with, like, in the public with people that you don't necessarily play with on a regular basis, right?
Yeah.
It's hard to convince me to say, go back to the days of, like, if I were to go back to the days of Vets Knights, and there was no Games Workshop rule, which is basically non-existent now, that basically said your entire army has to be painted if you want to come play here. Three colors and based, that's it. The absolute minimum, put them on the table, play. I would have had a much, much harder time playing then. And in tournaments, you and I have both said, like, I won't play somebody whose army is unpainted, so please don't match me up with that person because it's going to be awkward. It's not fun for me to play with armies that are unpainted. However, the caveat to that is, if it's in my basement and we're all excited for the game and people just want to play, sure, I'll put some unpainted models on the table because that prompts me to paint models. Like Onslaught's coming up in October, I am going to finish my Works Raptor for that because I'm taking that Works Raptor torpedo cruiser squadron in my all corporate fleet.
Nice.
So like, well, yeah, that's what prompts me to do those things.
Yeah. And I was going to say, for Onslaught, I want to get my Malifaux painted up because I want to do that on a Sunday, and I want to paint my last battlecruiser for my Ralthosa, and then I'm trying to decide if I want to be janky and run the discounted corrosive commander with a biohazard on my frigates, and then just be like, let's run a frigate swarm because I get like 5 point per squadron fucking biohazard ammo.
There you go. But yeah, painted models is important when you're playing in public. That is what I will say. That's the shortened mm-hmm. version of my answer.
Yeah, I will not go to a tournament without unpainted. So even though I am signed up for a War Machine event in 6 weeks up in Edmonton, and I am working towards getting my shit painted because I will personally not play with unpainted stuff because it's a mark of pride at that point where
it's a mark of pride. It's a mark of respect for your opponent.
Absolutely.
It's like
and again, I'm expecting being a War Machine tournament, I'm going to be one of three dudes with a painted list, but that's my line in the sand. Painted models to me are hugely important.
Marcus, he had another one here. He has a couple down here, so I'm just going to keep skipping through them. Why do GW models only point with their left hand? Not that I want to make a model that is pointing at two things or anything. All right, cool. I don't know.
Yeah, I was going to say, right-hand bias, I guess.
Marcus also says, alcohol recommendations. Well, I always recommend scotch. However, lately, the beer orange juice is, I think, something that everyone should try because it's very refreshing. However, I put on a lot of weight drinking that, so I've ceased. I've stopped drinking it because I'm like, you know what? I'm putting on friggin' juice and beer. That is a lot of calories, so I'm going to go back to scotch, which is one of the lowest calorie drinks for alcohol, which is just a winner right there. What about you, Nathan?
For me, I think if I was going to recommend a beer, I would say get one bottle. You don't really need more than that of the Innocent Gun whiskey cask aged beer.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's nice. It's got a lot of strong flavoring from the casks, but it's not something that you're going to do more than like drink one of and sip. Like it's not like you're like, I'm going to buy a six pack of this and just fucking down it. Like it's hot day, ice cold. You just want to sip that beer and nurse it over the course of an hour or so. And it's just incredibly enjoyable. And then you're done.
I think that's the best advice for Innocent Gun stuff because I've tried them all. They're all okay.
Yeah, they are all okay. But like I said, on a nice hot day, it's got a nice complex flavor because you can kind of taste like a little bit of that whiskey in it. And like I said, it's just like if you just have one and you sip it, you're going to finish it going, that was enjoyable. By the time you get done your second one, you're just going to be like, why did I buy more than two of these?
Exactly. All right. Andrew says, worst modeling sin, bad unrealistic pose, too much decoration, or something else.
Too much flash, straight up.
And by flash, you mean?
Let's go back to Celestant-Prime.
Well, I figured that's what you were talking about, but...
No, but I mean, like, it's...
Flash has another meaning in modeling.
Touche. You know, like, how about, we'll say flare. Too much flare. The minimum is 14 pieces.
That's right.
So, that's all it is.
You know, the Nazis had flare. They made the Jews wear them. See, for me, that's not even really it. I think it's concept. Like, modeling sin, if I can cut it off, it's fine, right? So flare, in a lot of cases, I can minimize it by chopping a lot of it off. So I wouldn't say that that's the absolute worst.
But if you chopped off all of the flare for the Celestant-Prime, you'd just have an empty base.
That one model is a piece of flare. So yes. There's no chopping it. I think for me, the worst modeling sin is overusage of one particular theme, right? So if it's skulls and it's skulls everywhere, so it's the mark of Khorne, it's the mark of Khorne everywhere, right? Like we've talked about that where it's just like, oh my God, why does this guy need 12 marks of Khorne on him? You know, why does he need 13 skulls braided into his hair? While he puts his foot up on a skull and the hilt of his sword is a skull and his axe blade is built out of a skull. You know, like those types of things really kill me, where I find it very awkward to look at a model and try to like it when it's just, hey, this guy's the skull guy, right? Like, I can't stand that shit.
Hey, skull guy.
Hammers everywhere. Hammers on his cape. Hammers on his fingernails. He's probably got nipple piercings with hammers hanging off of them. We can't see them, but they're there.
Oh, yeah, they absolutely are.
They absolutely are. So that's that for me. All right, moving on here. We're going to keep this show rocking. Fred Richards says, favorite miniature game that never went anywhere. Ooh. And I'm guessing what he means by never went anywhere is that it never went anywhere for us. Or maybe never went anywhere for
okay, the games. Yeah, I was going to say, for me, I think it's going to be the confrontation pre-painted, what was it, AT...
Oh, shit.
337 mm-hmm. or some bullshit like that. Because they released the starter set, and I was like, that game looks interesting. I wonder how a pre-painted miniature game is going to go. And then Rackham went out of business in like a month after that. And I was like, so that's how it goes. Like, it just... It seemed like such an interesting concept. I liked the aesthetic. I was keeping an eye on it to see if a player base developed in Calgary. And then 3 months later,
it just disappeared.
Rackham went belly up and it was gone. And I was like, well, glad I didn't buy that.
For me, my favorite miniatures game that never went anywhere is the Babylon 5 space game by Mongoose Publishing. I've kind of talked about it before, but yes, like this was the game where... Babylon 5, the space game, and the models had existed, and they'd kind of existed in this really bizarre, wacky form where, like, the game required a graphing calculator, and, like, it was this crazy over-the-top game. And then Mongoose Publishing picked it up, and then they wrote new rules for it, and the new rules were actually really cool. They were kind of interesting, and they actually remind me a lot of the Firestorm rules mm-hmm. as they sit now. They were kind of similar in that sense where, like, no, all weapons work the same way, but you add these different modifiers to make the weapons act differently. So, I loved that game. I was like, shit, the models, mm-hmm. the ships, the rules. I was ready to rock and roll. I literally never played a single game. Like, did not ever play it. And it was so bad that you could not even get the models. Like, 6 months after the game, like, they had put the game up and the rules were available and all that kind of stuff, you couldn't even get the models. Like, they were just unavailable, and then it was over. Nobody was playing it. Nobody could get it. It just died. And then it wasn't until like years later when even Mongoose went under. So that was that. Mm-hmm. All right. So Scott just says, lol. Marcus again, he says, you talked about skirmish and short games. How long can a big game get before you stop enjoying it? That's a great question. For me... I think anything past the like 3.5 hour mark is where I start looking at the clock going like, holy shit. A game lasting 3 hours is fine.
Yes.
But as soon as you hit that 3 hour mark, that clock starts ticking before somebody eventually just goes, fuck it, you win. Right?
Like, well, that's my biggest problem with playing poker and things like that, where it's just like, so you're telling me that this is just like a fucking game of attrition where the person who's willing to sit here for 12 hours is going to do the best? Well, fuck, after, like, no way. I agree with you. I think that a three-hour game can be fine, especially if it's close, if it's interesting, if it's engaging. I find that...
if it doesn't feel like 3 hours.
Yeah, if it doesn't feel like 3 hours. If there's enough going on and I'm not sitting idle for so long. Like, the people that slow play intentionally or otherwise just kind of kill all games for me because it's just... For the love of God, I want to be playing. I don't want to be sitting here or standing there watching you think and labor over your decisions. Like, just fucking shit or get off the pot. Let's get it going. I do feel like once you hit the 4 hour mark, I'm done. It doesn't matter what's going on. I absolutely cannot stand something that goes that long. But yeah, even then, right now, I don't know whether it's my ADD, but I'm really enjoying things in the 90 minutes or less.
Well, I think that if the game is engaging, it can last for a really long time, right? Like, we play D&D for 4 or 5 hours, right?
Yeah. Like, there is, like, I want to go more in depth into reasons, but there's a question further down that addresses it, so I'm going to talk more about this when we get there.
Well, yeah, for me, the big thing is, as soon as it becomes so over the top long to actually become hard to plan for it, right? Like, I was going to play the game with John Kingsway of Firestorm Armada, but because it took him so long to actually put it all together, you know, it was about 9:45 by the time he sent me a text message saying, hey, I'm ready to go. And I'm like, listen, dude, we're going to be up till like 2 a.m. Like, no, I don't think we're going to get a chance to play. As soon as something gets so big that, like, I have to start planning shit from, like, before my kids go to bed, that to me is when it becomes too long.
Yep. All right,
so we move on to Scott here. Scott, frequent guest host Scott, says, fluff gaming, is it worth doing a fluff army? Short answer, no.
Yeah, I was going to say, it really depends on where you play. If you're just a bunch of fluff nutters, then yeah, absolutely. If you only get a chance to play at events or at stores, fuck no.
I think playing a fluff army is fine if you're totally the guy who can be in that mindset of, I just don't care if I win. It's the 1 in 5 games that I do win that I go, yeah, it worked. You know? Yeah. But I think in general, is it worth it? No. Yes, they're cool display armies. Yes, you get to not care about list building. And yes, you get to just go into games with very, very little expectation. Mm-hmm. But in general, I don't find that to be super fun, which is why I've really never gone toward fluff armies. However, yep. fluff armies built into the game with rules and so on and so forth, yes, it is worth it. Oh, I want to play Imperial Fists for Space Marines. Oh, yeah, it's absolutely worth it. Oh, yeah, I want to play Iron Hands. Worth it. Because you are playing technically, this is where we go back to talking about how it was so brilliant that the new Space Marine Codex tricked everyone into playing fluff armies.
Yes.
Right.
Absolutely.
All right, so Jeremy says, the model you realized you hated, but only realized after you assembled it. I'm going to let you go first on this one, Nathan.
Wood Elf Noble with Great Bow. honestly, I thought I loved the model. I mean, kudos to Heavy Metal because goddamn that paint scheme.
I remember you played that like 2 games and I never saw it again.
Yes, absolutely. So for those who don't know, it's like the dude that's kind of like 1 foot up on a tree, which should have been, we should have realized was Games Workshop's sign of things to come. The bow down by his side with like the fucking helmet with the antlers on it.
Yes.
Thought it was super cool. Loved the idea of running Ultra Kindred. Absolutely wanted to run him. Mm-hmm. And then I built him and then I thought about painting him and then I'd look and I was just like, man, he's got a lot of fucking flair. Oh shit. Look at, are those vines going around his horns? Oh shit, is that a vine going around his legs? Oh god. And I was just like, no, I can't do it. Every time I'd think about painting that model, I just hated myself a little more. And I was like, yeah, fuck it.
For me, it's my Works Raptor Torpedo Cruisers. Oddly enough, though, I hate those models. And I'm going to struggle through them and finish them for Onslaught so that I can have them done. But I will never, ever fucking do it again because they are the worst. We brought them up in the modeling episode where I was saying, like, they just don't fucking, like, they don't go together. Everything's unbalanced and it not symmetric because shit's all tilted and the metal pieces are going to break off.
Well, I'm sure Maddie playing the Hawker fleet that he's committed to playing at Onslaught.
Good luck.
also feels your pain.
There you go. All right, so Danny says, my GW paints have all dried up. Should I buy new GW paints or try a new line from a different manufacturer?
Go P3.
You said P3?
Yeah, Privateer Press paints. Yes. Basically, they're the same consistency as old good Games Workshop paints. The biggest problem with Games Workshop is as soon as you buy their new line, they're just going to discontinue the colors that you used. And they did it with their old line. They're dropping a dozen or so colors. At least the last Bell of Lost Souls rumor I had was that a dozen colors are getting dropped from the range. Now, it's just Games Workshop is too bottom line oriented that they will continually stop producing the lowest selling paints because it's not making enough dollars for them. And when you are a hobbyist, when you are relying on these colors to finish projects, especially if you're still into Games Workshop and painting your 200 model fucking Skitarii army or whatever the fuck your current project is, to make it 80 models in and then have them discontinue your paints when you still have another 100 guys to do is just such a kick to the fucking balls. Like, don't even waste your time painting with Games Workshop paints. I've ditched them and I've never been happier.
Well, here's the thing. If you can paint like John, the Prodigy, the Boreantal. If you can paint it at a speed where, like, you pick up an army and it's painted in less than a month, Games Workshop paints are fine. However, the thing to know is that there is nothing special about Games Workshop paints.
Nope, they're really
They were your first love. They were the first thing, your first girlfriend. Pick one. But everybody knows when you start dating other people, you realize that that first one was not good. And really, the biggest thing here is that they're overly expensive and you can get more for cheaper from other lines. They're more consistent and they also do different things. Like, it's only just the last couple of years where Games Workshop suddenly realized that, like, having base coat paints and thin coat paints and stuff like that actually were required in terms of people who are trying to do really high quality models. Like inks and washes, I still will sometimes pick up from Games Workshop, but I only pick them up because I'm not I don't paint fast anymore in the sense that, like, I'll paint an entire army in a month. I will slowly piecemeal things throughout the span of, like, a year. And it becomes really, really annoying when stuff is drying out because the design of the paint pots for Games Workshop is bullshit. They dry out because that's a terrible design. Get something in a squeeze bottle and you suddenly realize that shit doesn't dry out.
Ever.
Ever. Or but like even, this whole like pop the top garbage, like it's built to dry out.
Well, I was going to say, Privateer Press also pops the top, but each bottle is about twice as much. So I find that like I've only been painting with Privateer Press paints for about a year and a half now. I have never had one dry out, and I know that it's still the pop the top. The design of the cap looks better. It actually feels like there is an airtight seal when I close it, which I think is going to help prolong the longevity of it. But like I said, so far I haven't had any problems. I was at a class at Adepticon, and what the instructor who was teaching a wet blending class, where I was blown away at how well he painted, but he really didn't teach fucking anything. Oh, he even said, he's like, you don't paint in my class, you just watch me, because he's some French fucker. You know, he said, incredible, but he even said he only paints with, Privateer Press paints, P3s. After that, I've started looking into them, and they have a limited number of colors similar to old Games Workshop range, so you might need to supplement from other ranges like Vallejo with the squeeze bottles, like you said.
Yeah, but, and for washes, check out Secret Weapon.
Secret Weapon is fucking great. Otherwise, so is Army Painter. Army Painter's strong tone is probably the old chestnut ink for me, where it's just like, I use that shit on everything.
There you go. All right, so, Brent, he says, do y'all listen to any podcasts for other hobbies like Dungeons & Dragons? Nathan doesn't listen to podcasts.
Nope.
So there's that answer. And yes, I do listen to a variety of different podcasts. But my attention span for podcasts has kind of come to like this very narrow thing where like I'll pick up a bunch of random podcasts and listen to them a couple of times and then I'll stop listening to them. Like there's not a lot of stuff that I listen to on the regular anymore. It's kind of if the title or the tagline or the description for a podcast catches my attention and it's something I actually want to listen to, then I will jump in and I'll listen to it. But like, I couldn't name anybody out here, like anything out here that would be like a real specific podcast. Mm-hmm. I find a lot of stuff that I watch now is kind of moved toward like live streaming, Twitch and YouTube live streaming and things of that nature. Which is really interesting. Like there's a Dungeons and Dragons live stream that they also then, repost to YouTube, called Critical Role on Geek and Sundry. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you've heard about it, Nathan.
No.
It's basically a bunch of voice actors doing D&D. Okay. And it's pretty funny. It's pretty entertaining. And there's one girl who's really, really annoying, but everyone else is really good.
Oh, I remember so you saying that.
Quite entertaining. She's the cute girl, and that's why she just, man, oh man, does she love the spotlight. And then, like, in the last episode, she, like, came to tears at some point while, like, her character was out. I was just like, Jesus fucking Christ. It went a little too far. So Tim says, which way would you prefer a game company to do their releases? One army at a time or an expansion book with a few units for every army? I mean, we kind of talked about this when we talked about supplements and things of that nature. Generally, I like to see armies updated as a whole. I think that feels much better. It feels more complete. I think the problem with putting out an expansion book with a few units every once in a while means that everything feels incomplete. You always kind of look at the rest of the army and go like, but is this the way it's going to stay? Like, what am I going to do? So, yeah, mm-hmm. I don't know. I prefer a whole army at a time.
Yeah, I agree. Like I said, it just, you know, small expansion book with a few units for every army. I know that that's what War Machine does. It does keep everyone generally happier, but that's because War Machine doesn't, like, the reason it works for War Machine is that they don't redo things. Like, they don't ever come back and say, okay, it's time for Crix to get a new army book. They literally just basically release DLC for every faction when they release one of those books. That can work if that's the way your game is set up. I mean, that's what Spartan is doing with Planetfall right now, where they're just like, hey, everybody, all your aerial helixes are out. Here are your rules, except fuck you. We didn't release the rules, so Jada Gamercast had nothing to talk about this week. You know it.
Yes.
You fucking indeed. Know it. We're putting all of our eggs in that basket, man. That was all of our eggs. Again, it depends on how it is that you do army releases. If it's a brand new game, give me everything all at once. And even that's kind of what Planetfall did as well, where it's just like, hey, brand new game. Here's all the core helixes for everyone. Okay, now here are these armies, allied helixes, and here's some more shit. But, you know, if I can't play a game with what you're giving me, fuck off. Like, what? Why? Why are you wasting your time, Codex Qatari and Adeptus Mechanicus?
Exactly.
All right.
So Tim also says, which do you prefer when playing a game, alternating activations or player turns?
So this is the one that I mentioned where the game length. Straight up, player turns is bullshit and should be retired as a game mechanic, as a trope in miniature gamings. Player turns right now is the pre-measuring of 5 years ago. Why the fuck do we still do it this way? Alternating activations are great, and this has to do with the game time. Like, for me, I cannot stand a player turn game that lasts more than 90 minutes, because that means that I've spent 45 minutes sitting there doing fucking nothing. It's awful.
Yeah, rolling it's saving throws. Right.
Yeah, it's such bullshit, and I hate it. Or in a game like War Machine, you don't even roll saving throws, because all they do is roll to hit you versus your defense and then see how much damage they do compared to your armor. So all you're doing is with your fucking, dry erase, ticking off damage boxes or removing models. Like, it is so much bullshit to sit there, because I feel like player turns is who plays solitaire the best. You know, there's no reacting to what your opponent's doing. There's no being able to foil his assassination run or stop his alpha strike or whatever the fuck you're doing. Alternating activations is really the only way that games should be played now. Pretty much every modern game design runs off alternating activations because they help keep players engaged. When we're playing a game of Firestorm Armada, if we're playing 1,200 points, it is fucking tooth and nail, back and forth, shit isn't dying, lots of activations both sides, we can run about 4 hours. It doesn't feel like 4 hours because I am doing something every step of the game. So that's me collecting my point defense and my shield dice while you're going, and then I'm activating a unit, and I'm trying to do all of my shit, and then you're activating. And it's just like, I'm only ever idle for 2 to 3 to 5 minutes at a time, and it's very easy to stay engaged and have a very long game when you're doing that. So, which do I prefer? Alternating activations. I honestly believe that War Machine should just drop a third edition or a fucking errata. And that is literally the game as it exists right now, but alternating activations, and it would probably be the best miniature game on the market.
Oh, interesting. I have to agree in terms of alternating activations being the better of the two. I think that playing game turns becomes so much about who gets first turn, and so little about, you know, actually having a plan and sticking to it or being able to adapt to the way things work, right? How many games have you played of Warhammer or Warhammer 40K or War Machine where the first turn goes so badly for you, you just feel like you don't even do anything in the second turn, right? What am I going to do? I guess I can't really do it. I'm just going to move forward and let him fuck me again for another 20 minutes.
Well, my game, you can go on.
So basically that's the big thing, is I think alternating activations allows players to be constantly engaged in the sense that, yes, you can have a plan. Yes, you can work around that plan, but if you're unable to adapt, you're going to start finding yourself faltering. I know a lot of people who play Firestorm, and when they play, they arrange their forces on the board, they spread them out, and they play a very specific way, and then as soon as you start getting into turn two, turn three, every squadron's doing its own thing. The plan has fallen apart. And I love being able to play a game where, you know, tactical flexibility is really, really important, as opposed to, I'm going to gunline forward, shoot the shit out of you to the point where I know I'm not going to get hit back nearly as hard, and then guess what? The next turn's going to go even better for me, and the next turn's going to go even better for me, right?
Well, that was like, as I was going to, you know, as I kind of interrupted you to say and then let you finish, my War Machine game against John, he had a fully optimized tournament list built by a good friend of mine. I love you, Mike. Probably one of the biggest War Machine tournament D-bags I know. full on, super hard, super optimized, take advantage of every last little bit you could list, versus my I guess I can make 50 points work. What models are in this case list? First two turns was very tentative. I was trying to slow play, hoping that he would commit somewhere, and I could kind of use my speed to take advantage of that. Eventually didn't. He won the game on turn three. I dragged it out to turn six because I was, like I said, all I was doing was dragging it out. I knew that at no point could I win. I hoped that he would get complacent and I could make a run at his caster. He did. I did about half of his caster's wounds, hoping for the assassination win. But again, turn three, he won because that's that stupid player turn bullshit where it's just like there was nothing I could do to react to what was happening. That sucked. So, yeah, alternating activations all the way.
Mr. C.H. West says, what game or rule set disappointed you the most? Not the one that sucked, but the one that you had the most hope for that totally let you down.
Battlefleet Gothic.
Interesting. Why is that?
Because Battlefleet Gothic should have been a really good fleet system, but at the end of the day, kind of like Age of Sigmar, you had tight core rules that showed a lot of promise, followed by a whole lot of fucking garbage unbalancing with the different factions. And the game, every time I played it, just wasn't fun because the core rules never matched up with what you experienced when playing it.
For me, it was Storm of Magic. I was really excited for Storm of Magic because at the time I was really hardcore into 8th edition. Yep. You know, we've said it before, like I still love 8th edition. I still think it's such a great rule set. And, you know, when they had announced, like, hey, we're going to put out this second, you know, version of Warhammer that you can play where magic is the big gun, and you just play Storm of Magic. And, man, I was ready to go. I was really interested. I'd, like, seen some of the spells online had been leaked, and I was reading through them, and, oh, there were these huge catastrophic spells, and it was like,
well,
this could be really...
monsters everywhere.
Right. Like, this could be really, really interesting. However, once I went through, read through the rules, and played a game, it just completely failed for me. I mean, it was
so
goofy.
I couldn't even make it through all the rules because Storm of Magic sucked so bad. I made it halfway through. And then I just put the book down and was like, whatever. I know we're covering it on the podcast, but I can't read the rest of this.
Well, and that was the big thing, right? Like, I wanted it to be good. I really wanted to see, like, oh, okay, I'm going to play this type of Warhammer game now. It's going to be really interesting, and I'm going to be able to kind of go with a different direction with it where, you know, people who bitch about Magic might not like it, but the people who want to get into this for Storm of Magic are going to absolutely love it. But when I go through it, it's just like everybody gets a focal point, and then you stand on this focal point, and this does this,
and
everything.
You can't
like,
ever be killed or pushed off. And
it's, it's just so bizarre the way the rules were written. It just completely let me down. So Marcus has another one in here. He says, for games that I need... what do you do for scenery? Oh, for games that need it, what do you do for scenery? Plastic scenery kits, laser cut wood, homemade, or empty beer cans? My basement, I've got a very minimalist amount of terrain. I feel like generally terrain can make or break a game. However, terrain should never, ever need to be really like specific or detailed, right? I don't think there's anything wrong with beer cans if that's what you're playing with, but if you can find, and there's a lot of great scenery companies out there, I tend to go for plastic scenery kits or like foam scenery kits, like pre-painted foam ones.
Yeah.
And if you get like 4 or 5 good pieces of scenery for any given game, that should be enough. Mm-hmm. I don't ever feel like you need to have like, oh, we're playing this, huh? Well, I better bring out the Citadel of blah, blah, blah and put it on the, you know, and I better go grab the right. Fences of Ghosts and put them on the table. No, like, in my mind, you know, get a river, get a hill, you know, get a castle, get a tower, right. Get a couple huts, you know, like a couple village houses, like thatch roof cottages, whatever, man. I think if you have 4 or 5 good pieces, you can always have a good game. And, you know, move around the table and go crazy with it. But, you know, in general, I like pre-made, pre-painted shit at a good price, right? Games Workshop scenery is garbage because it's over-the-top, specific, detailed, crazy scenery that you have to put together and paint and pay $150 for. Like, it's just...
and only good for their one game.
Right, exactly. Like, it's just... that's where
I'm a big fan of homemade, but I'm also, like... homemade works for so much. You can make hills, you can make forests, you can make craters. You can do all of that super fast, super cheap, super easy. So huge fan of that. With that being said, Terry and I did stop at Michael's today and found like a fucking Wild West saloon made out of balsa wood that we're going to paint the shit out of for Wild West Exodus. And we picked up a bunch of other things that we're going to also turn into terrain. So I kind of like the idea of, you know, there is some pre-painted stuff. There is some, you know, homemade stuff. And you can kind of sometimes even merge the two. So that's definitely the best for scenery for me. Because why bother spending $1,000 on your Realm of Battle board with all of your scenery? It's bullshit.
Yeah, exactly. All right. So Don says, have you guys tried the Halo Fleet game? No.
No. Don't want to.
Yeah, exactly.
I was going to say, I can't say that I won't, but there's absolutely no desire for me to do so because I feel like the license is 10 years too late.
Yeah, absolutely. In general, you have to understand that, like, when it comes to fleet games, we're already kind of in love with a fleet game, and we already have a backup fleet game. So there's nothing there that attracts me to that in particular, especially because Halo itself is a pretty linear story in the sense that it's like, you play as humans or you play as aliens. All right, well, thanks.
And that's exactly it. It's like we're in the Firestorm universe. You have, what, 30 different races between the Marauders and Mercenaries?
I'd say that's probably accurate, yeah. 30 different fleets, not necessarily races.
Well, yeah, because, I mean, because humans are, like, six of them. but like I said, it's just like you have such incredible variety. Why do I care about humans versus Covenant? That's it. Two people, it's like the fucking, like, even World of Warcraft with their Horde versus Alliance bullshit has more variety because at least my Alliance could be any number of different races. Instead
like
of
pandas.
Like pandas!
Speaking of pandas, Marcus says, Furies, are they something you can make fun of guilt-free if you're feeling bad about making disability or fat bloke jokes?
Absolutely.
Yes. Generally, I think it's culturally accepted to make fun of furries because there's a very blurred line between people who just really, really like animals and people who want to fuck animals. That is why furries, it's totally okay to make fun of them. Go for it. They're used to it. I mean, I don't like to hate on anybody for their sexual quirks and kinks, but in general, go for it. I've met more than enough at the conventions to say, yeah, you can absolutely make fun of them. It's fine.
Absolutely.
Oh my God. All right. So Daryl says, if you had to choose a single miniatures game to paint and play forever, assuming getting games in was no problem, which would you pick and play?
Ooh.
So this is the desert. This is the desert island question.
Yeah, the desert island question.
If you and I were stranded on a desert island, and we only had one game to play, what game would it be?
I think I'd have to go Planetfall. I think the aesthetic is great. I think that the gameplay is fast, furious, fun. Like, I've never played a game of Planetfall where at the end of it I was just like, man, I did not like X about that game. Like, yeah, there are some units that underperform, as is the case in every miniature game you'll ever play, but the game is just so fun, and the aesthetic is so fucking incredible. Like, I could just paint and play and build Planetfall forever, and boy, I wish that there was, like, a single other person in the city of Calgary that played it. Sure would be nice.
For me, it would be... See, I can't say Planetfall because it's just too new. Like, when we see the fully realized version of that game, maybe. But for now, honestly, it's kind of a toss-up. Because I want to say Firestorm. Because
Firestorm is just too long. Like, for me, it was Firestorm, Wild West,
Desert Island, dude.
Planetfall. I guess.
We're not going to get... You're never going to get that aerial helix on this desert island, Nathan.
No, where's my Robo Dragonfly?
Exactly. To be honest with you, I would probably say Warhammer. Like 8th edition Warhammer, because of the scale of the game, because of the amount of variety, because of the various armies to choose from, and all that kind of stuff. If that was the only game I could ever play, I would probably go that route, just because I think that that would be the game that would be the hardest to get bored of if it was the only game I could play. Mm. I like playing Firestorm Armada. I think Firestorm Armada is a fucking great game, and I really enjoy it, but I would probably say Warhammer. I think that would be the one I would go with.
Fair enough.
Dan Beyer, painting legend Dan Beyer of the of the hottest Canadian podcast out there.
Hobby Night in Canada.
Hobby Night in Canada, son. He says, how many points do you get back if your Chaos Space Marine takes a heavy bolter?
Inside jokes are not good on podcasts. Well, moving on.
To explain the inside joke, this goes back to when we all worked for Games Workshop. We would get these random phone calls from people who basically refused to read the rules. So they would call us up and they would be like, hey, okay, we're playing a game right now and I'm trying to do this and he's trying to do this. Like, do I get to charge first? And it's like, no, man, like you charge in the assault phase. Like, you don't, what are you talking about? And he's just like, no, no, but like I get to charge, right? But we got a phone call from a guy who called in and said, how many points do I get back if my Space Marine buys a heavy bolter? And I took the call and I was sitting there on the phone and I was just like, I don't understand what you're saying. And he just kept repeating it over and over and over again. I was like, you don't get any points back. He's like, no, but it says 5. And I was like, no, you don't get any points. Like, it was this really weird conversation where I was like, did you read the rules? And he's like, no.
He was just trying to argue with you because he's like, well, if a bolter is 15, then how many points does the bolter cost? Because I should get those back after I pay the 5 for the heavy bolter.
That's right.
Like, no.
you don't get anything back, man. No, he was sure. He was adamant. Mm-hmm. Kevin says, under what condition do you prefer casual, low-commitment games, and under what conditions do you prefer long and high-investment assembly painting, 100-plus page rulebook games? Do you like dabbling in a bit of both, or would you rather be devoted to one or the other if you had the time and money? Under conditions that I prefer casual games are very much games where I can spend as much time drinking and talking as I am playing the game. When you're playing high commitment games that require a lot of investment, it tends to be a lot of like kind of quiet contemplation, moving your models around. There's very little conversation going on. You're just kind of chit-chatting more about the dice that you just rolled as opposed to anything else. So in general, I think those are the two where, like, if I just want to drink and talk and also be playing a game at the same time, that's where I would say, okay, we got to play casual, low commitment type games.
I have kids, so low commitment casual games, fuck yeah, all day, every day. No, I mean, here's the thing. I do, every now and then you want a full, like, fucking 5-course meal. And when I'm in the mood for that, goddamn, do those long games with high investment just scratch that itch. But I find that me personally can really only do, like, a tournament of that every couple months with maybe the odd game in between. Before I'm just like, give me some fucking candy. Like, give me some low commitment, casual skirmish game, like fucking three dudes on my side. Bullshit to just pass the time and make me happy. Because the other thing that I love about it is, again, you know, with a high assembly and painting and this and that, like, my 250 point lists for War Machine, you know, it's like, hey, paint like 50, 60 guys. That is literally the two full lawmen and the Warrior Nation Wild West Texas faction. That's my whole Malifaux faction. That is my entire new Bushido faction, as well as the add-ons that I have for my old Bushido faction, is still less models than that. So, like I said, it's just, I like to have one long game that I have on standby. And other than that, lots of fucking popcorn games.
All right, so Colin says, when is Nathan going to invite me to play a game of Wild West Exodus? Are your werewolves ready to be tamed by the law?
Yes.
Okay. Moving forward, Colin says, more serious, what do you think of the growing trend of companies releasing free rulebooks? I think free rulebooks is going to have to be the norm. I kind of attributed it a couple of weeks back when I was talking to a few people about and I've talked about it on the show before about how in video games, free-to-play has become very prominent, and it's one of the only markets out there for entertainment that basically has to prove that their game is good in order for you to then give them money. And it's one of those things where I feel like a lot of these games, with the competition that they're dealing with, it becomes a must. You kind of have to do it now. You have to put out your rules for free in order to entice people to come play. You have to prove to them that your game is worth playing before they'll ever take the plunge into doing it. So I think any company that's still trying to, like, keep their rule book cordoned off behind the you have to come into the store and read it, or, you know, oh, we'll just buy the starter kit and see if you like it. Like, those days are the days of the past. And I think that if you are unwilling to release your rules for free, you are going to be constantly at a disadvantage in comparison to your competitors. Your competitors are out there throwing the rules out for free, saying, like, yeah, man, just fucking download the rulebook and go. Well, and I think that anybody, I don't know, like, what the mentality behind that is anymore.
Listen, like, right now I can name one game that does it, and that's Warhammer 40,000. That's it. War Machine has released all of their starter rules. Now, and this goes back to the previous question of the expansion shit. Yes, you still have to buy all of your expansions if you specifically want the book with the fluff covering that event, as well as the fucking rules for specific models, things of that nature. But even Privateer Press dumped their core rules for War Machine and Hordes out for free, along with all of the main faction army books that will cover about 80 to 85% of each faction's rules. So just like, that's free. Wrath of Kings is free. Wild West Exodus is free. Kings of War is free. Age of Sigmar is free. Like, it's just like, every game, like, I agree with you. It's absolutely the way of the past. People are going to do away with it, and even current Bell of Lost Soul rumors have 40K going free next year.
Yeah.
You know, so you're just like, you know, it's absolutely a thing of the past. There are too many games out there. How can you expect me to stand there and pay for your models when 10 of your competitors are going to give me their rules?
Right.
And that's where it's at. So, absolutely, I think it's great, because if you cannot stand on the rules of your game, of course, make people buy the rules.
Well, I mean, I wouldn't say it goes that far. I just think it's the way of the past. It is the, well, of course you have to pay for these. That's, you buy the rule book, you pay for them. And it's just no longer the way things work anymore. We're in a digital age, and in the digital age, doing things in that manner is just a complete failure. You know, we understand that it costs money to do these things, and we understand that you want to make money off of doing these things. But in general, that has been a huge wall, and that's broken down a lot of sales for companies like Games Workshop, where a lot of people look at, you know, oh, I got to, you know, $75, I got to go buy the new Space Marine Codex. I know a lot of people who are just like, you know what, I'm just done now. I just don't care anymore.
Yeah.
Because that, you know, when I look at my big pile of codexes and army books, I don't want any of those.
Well, and that's a good point. As I'm looking at my shelf right now, and I am counting about $1,000 in rules.
Oh yeah, easy.
If not more. I mean,
oh, more than that. Probably, no, when I counted them off, I sold a bunch.
I was gonna say, I'm probably at $1,000 in Codex, not counting my three End Times, my 8th edition limited edition that's there, my War Machine Prime, my 40K 7th.
It really just comes down to, people have associated a different value to rules. And the value is zero now in a lot of cases, because it's the expectation is that that is something that you should give to them free. It's like the big argument about DLC and, like, on disc DLC and all that kind of stuff that's been going on for the past couple of years, where, like, even the big Metal Gear game that's coming out soon is going to include an enormous amount of DLC, where they're basically saying, like, oh, well, yeah, you paid $75 for this game. Yeah, $75.
That is unbelievable.
Yeah.
People, you know, still care about Metal Gear?
Apparently.
Holy shit, like, I'm just shocked, really.
The truly. Phantom Pain, or whatever. But no, basically, you know, they're saying, like, oh yeah, you're going to pay money for this, and then you're going to be able to play what we give you to play. But all of the extra stuff, like, it was the same thing with Arkham, the Batman game, where they you buy the game, but there's all this stuff on the game that you don't get to play unless you give us extra money to pay for it. It's like, but I already bought the game. It's on the disc. I can get to it.
Listen, if you want a nickel and dime, make an MMO like everyone else, okay?
Basically, there you go. All right, so Scott Rennie says, I can't roll dice to save my life. Can you give me some tips that might help, or should I just take up LARPing instead?
Starting or Malifaux, because at least Malifaux uses a deck of cards.
Or Relic Knights.
Or Relic Knights. There you go.
Here is my long-standing theory on dice, and generally, it's been good to me. Trust your dice. It's so stupid, but trust me, like, it's one of those things where, like, people have this, like, hate relationship with their dice where it's just like, that fucking set right there is terrible, or, oh, that set right there is terrible. And trust me, with ChessX dice, that is a distinct possibility.
Yes. Now, this is actually really funny coming from you, because when my daughter was 2 and would parrot everything, we would always sing, like, you know, her favorite song was Wheels on the Bus, and then she'd start to freestyle it, and she even got to the Uncle Lang on the Bus says, my dice suck. Like, this is where you were just 4 short years ago.
Correct, and that's where you are now.
You know what? I've actually come to terms with it. Like, my game of War Machine yesterday, my chain gun fired. I have a literal minigun, and when I rolled up the random shots, I got 6, which is the most fucking shots that it can fire. Shooting at one of John's pigs, and War Machine's all 2d6, right? I needed a 7 on each shot to hit, and I got 1 hit and 5 misses, because on 2 dice, I couldn't hit 7 more than once out of 6 attempts. And I was just like, well, what can you do? Do I at least hurt you? Snake eyes. I do not. You're just like, all right, your turn, John. Like, I'm just like, what the fuck else can I do?
Just trust your dice. If you have the money, buy an expensive set.
What, like Maddie? Like, to spend like
$200? Well, I don't mean you need to buy like a Tiger Eye gem set, but like, if you can, if you can drop some money to get yourself like a solid metal set or a solid plastic set or something like that, then go that way. But in general, just trust your dice and stick with them. Don't dump them every time you have a bad game. That's all I can say. And should you take up LARPing? No.
Mm-hmm.
Just don't.
Friends don't let friends LARP.
So yeah, exactly. So the last question we have here is from Matt Housen. He says, why is there such a strong love-hate relationship with GW? Why didn't we see the sign that GW didn't give 2 shits about the games they produced? Well, the love-hate relationship is simple. We loved them, and now we hate them. Betrayed, right? It's like in any relationship. Bitch cheats on you, dump them, right? Like, it just,
right.
It's one of those things where you can only take so much from a person that you care about, or from something that you care about, right? Like, it's like watching Lost. We all got into Lost and we're like, this shit's fucking great. It's so good. I can't believe how good this show is. And then, like, for a lot of people, it took season after season after season of constant disappointment where they were just, before they just said, you know what? Fuck it.
See, I never got into Lost, but that was Heroes for me.
Yeah, Heroes.
And you were the person that season after season, you're like, no, I'm invested. I have to watch it.
I was trying so hard to make it work. That being said, I will not watch the new Heroes.
Yes. I was right. Gonna say, it's a nice trailer, but they were able to make nice trailers all the fucking time. No, for me, it's just, I feel like the biggest reason there is a love-hate relationship with Games Workshop is that I think that 99.9% of all miniature war gamers that are here today are able to put their finger on and say, I am only into this hobby because of Games Workshop. Right. Whether it was 40K, whether it was Warhammer, Lord of the Rings, no matter what it was, they were in malls, they were running intro games, they were the gateway drug. And so many of us have spent thousands upon thousands of hours building and painting and playing these games. And now you have a company that is entirely bottom line driven, and they just don't care about their customers. They do not care about their customers even a little bit. And I think that's the biggest reason why we have such a love-hate relationship. Like, I have moved on. Like, look, the only reason I do anything Games Workshop related is because of this podcast. We will review codexes and army books, although the army books aren't a thing anymore. We will review codexes. You know, only because of the podcast, and even then, you know, to go back to those people that are just like, what are you about analysts? I'm going to go listen to fucking people talk 8 hours about the nuance of tactical marines or whatever the fuck bullshit other podcasts do. I don't listen to podcasts. We covered this. I'm wasted. No, but like, it's just, it's one of those things where it's just like, we approach Codex reviews now from a place of nostalgia. We talk about what we hope to see that can really play up to the fluff, because our involvement in the Games Workshop universe now is basically Black Library. Full stop. So, does this Codex live up to the expectations that Games Workshop themselves have created through their own fluff? No. Well, I remember when we wore onions on our belts, which was the style at the time, and Dark Eldar had las cannons. Right. Do you remember Dark Eldar having las cannons?
I remember those days.
Oh, God.
Their las cannons were better.
No, their las cannons were las cannons.
That's correct.
Literal las cannons.
So basically, I mean, I think you did hit the nail on the head in the sense that kind of everybody comes from this same shared experience. We've all kind of moved on from it in some cases we haven't. But we still love the theme. And that is why it's a love-hate. We hate the company, but we love the theme. We love the setting. We love the universe. We love, you know, Space Marines, and we love Dark Eldar and Eldar and all that kind of stuff. It's all there, and we really, really enjoy it. But the company that puts this garbage out, we can't fucking stand. And when they ruin something we love, we can't stand it. I read comics. I read a lot of comics. And it's one of those things where I will start reading a comic. I was actually talking to a buddy at work, and I gave him all like 14 trades of like the Exiles comic.
Mm.
And Exiles was a really entertaining comic, and I really liked it. And it just got to a point where when it ended, I was like, fucking thank God. And then they started it back up again, and I was like, I guess I'll pick up an issue or two and see if they're going to, like, do something interesting with it. And it was terrible. And I will still think back fondly to that particular comic book run, because it was a really fun, interesting comic book run that I really enjoyed. But in general, like, yeah, it just – they ruined it. It fell off. So
I feel
it's
like
not that
Why
I hate Exiles.
Man was that for me.
Sorry, what?
Why the Last Man? It was kind of that exact same thing for me, because I feel like the first three trades of Why the Last Man are some of the finest storytelling in comics, period. And then it's clear that Image was just like, okay, so I know you had an ending, but you can't end it. Like, almost like Fox with Prison Break, where it's just like, listen, I know that this was a one season. Or Lost. This was a one season show. You had a concept, but we're going to put this on hiatus so you can film a different ending to set this up for, you know, Infinity. That's what it kind of felt like with Why the Last Man, because it ended up meandering and wandering and not really having a direction at all. And then eventually they're just like, oh, and we're done. And the ending was pretty okay. Like I enjoyed the ending to the series, but like I said, it's just like that whole middle chunk was just like, so I could just go 1, 2, 3, 8 and be just as happy and get a more complete story. I feel like that's kind of the same thing. They kind of lose their way, but that doesn't necessarily make me think of Why the Last Man is a bad series. I still think that it's an excellent series. I love to go back and read it, despite knowing that it gets just directionless in the middle.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I definitely see what you're saying with Exiles.
So there you have it, guys. Thanks very much for all of your questions. We definitely appreciate you taking control of the show for us, since we didn't have a whole lot to talk about. So let's move on to a bit of email. And this is part of the stupidity check that we're going to talk about on today's show. We're going to go back. We're going to go back to the old days. In this particular stupidity check, and I'm just trying to find it right now. There we go. It is about the Dreadhold. The Chaos Dreadhold. Oh,
now, hold on. Are we really just going to talk about the one Chaos Dreadhold and not the fact that Games Workshop basically released two kits in the most ridiculous one-click bundles of their fucking lives?
Oh, there's not just two kits. There is the Fortress of Grim Corruption, the Infernal Realm.
No, but if you look
Octa
at it.
The Dick.
If you, okay, look at the Fortress of Grim Corruption.
Oh, I know.
This is one thing for the wall bullshit and one thing for the tower, but times 8 or correct. Whatever the fuck.
Yes. Then there's the Malefic Dreadhold. There's the Direstone Redoubt. There's the Summoner's Gate. There's the Skull Coven Forge, the Magebane Wall, the Chaos Dreadhold : Overlord Bastion, the Chaos Dreadhold Malefic Gate. Anyways, They basically just put the same pieces in various quantities for you to buy and then gave them a name. But the question that Scott had for us here, he says, "Hey, Jaded Gamers, I've got a question for you. After seeing the Chaos Dreadhold kit, something has been bothering me, but it's taken me a couple of weeks to figure it out. How do the forces of Chaos defend it without any ranged weapons? Do you guys have any theories about the proper way to defend a Dreadhold? Cheers." Well, thank you very much, Scott. Obviously we do, as geniuses. So here's the thing. This looks undefendable. It does, because what is it? It's a circle with some towers, and you could probably put some guys in it. So the question is less about how do you defend it and more about what is it that they're trying to defend by putting inside of this weird pseudo-arena sort of thing.
Can we also talk about skulls as a building material? Like,
oh, yes.
Not only is it just this silly little circle with I have no idea whether it's like the last Krispy Kreme in the warp or whatever is in there. Like, I just don't understand. But, like, skulls. Like, really, we're building everything out of this. Like, even a pile of skulls is still really easy to break through compared to such mundane building materials like stone.
Or wood. Basically, the funny thing that I find about when I look at the Chaos Dreadhold is that it is virtually impossible to defend in the sense that they're building it out of a material that is a natural handhold.
Like, yes.
You've built walls. But, like, you've basically
built
handholds
and
ladders into each of these fucking walls, right? Like, it's silly. Like, it's so fucking stupid. But, yes, skulls as a building material is just hilarious. When I look at this thing, how would you defend it? Well, basically, you just open the gates and, like, let them come in. That's how you do it. Don't try to, like, close it and, like, stay up on the ramparts because there's no reason. There's no reason for that. A single catapult would be enough to deal with this thing, considering the fact that, like, there's no roof.
There's no
made of skulls.
Okay, now, I did make the mistake of opening the Fortress of Grim Corruption because I wanted to read what the Games Workshop description of this is. And this is pure comedy.
Oh, hit me.
I could not think of something better to say. This incredible bundle, and this is the $1,360 or $2,200 one if you're in New Zealand, because go fuck yourself, New Zealanders, you fucking Kiwis. This incredible bundle gives you 14 awesome scenery pieces with which to build your very own ultimate bastion of chaos. 2 malefic gates, 4 overlord bastions, 4 skull keeps, and 4 fortress walls to configure in any way you see fit. Pay tribute to the blood god in style.
Oh, my God.
Are you fucking kidding me? For the cost? Like, I could have bought 2 of my first car for the cost of this bullshit. I think I could buy 10 of your Camaros.
Probably. So, basically, here's the thing that just blows me away with this. This is where I go back to top where, like, the scenery question comes around, where you sit there and go, oh, yeah, it's all this pre-built, pre-cut, put together overly over the top scenery that you have to then paint and you put it in this particular order and you build it this way. This stuff on the table, is it going to look okay? Yeah, it'll be fine on the table, but it's no different from a tree, right? Like, it's no different from, like, any other wall set that you can buy or castle set that you can buy.
Is the tree made of skulls?
Well, the skulls are the fruit, right? Like, they ripen, they fall to the ground, and that's how you get skulls on the ground everywhere in the Warhammer and Warhammer 40K universe. Is basically these trees are everywhere. They just grow human skulls. And that's how sometimes the skulls are, like, totally different sizes, where, like, one model of the skull is really little. That's just an unripened skull. I play bass for unripened skulls. All right, so how do you defend it? Open the gates and let them come in and just to hope they're dumb enough to, like, walk into the trap. That's how you defend it. Otherwise, it's dumb walls and stupid towers that don't really accomplish anything. So, hey, good times. I don't understand why anyone would buy or like this scenery. It's terrible. I think the way Games Workshop is selling it is horrific.
Well, and again, what's so ridiculous is if I buy into the Games Workshop lifestyle, and let's talk about how they wish to God they were Apple. So let's talk about it from a lifestyle perspective. They want me to dump $1,000 on their Age of Sigmar garbage, and then they want me to pick up this bullshit fucking Fortress of Grim Corruption and 6 Realm of Battle tiles for another $1,500. Like, do they honestly expect me to drop $2,500 on one single army? But I guess I need one for you to play, Lang, so let's drop another grand. So now $3,500 is what Games Workshop is hoping they bilk out of every one of their customers. Are you fucking kidding me? Like, how stupid do you think we are? And the worst part is there's someone that's probably added this to cart already.
More than likely.
You know, like,
I wouldn't do it if it didn't work.
That's exactly it, where you're just like, what the fuck? What do you mean this is working? Yeah. How?
Basically, that's that. All right, so that brings us to the weekly listener poll question. You guys have been asking us a lot of questions. A lot of them have to do with what do you like, what do you don't like, you know, what kind of games are you playing, what kind of games are you trying to get into. And I think the big question that I want to ask you guys is, how many games are you currently actively playing? Because I would say for me right now, I'm currently actively playing 4 games. Mm-hmm. Maybe 5 games. If I'll count D&D and I'll say 5 games, right? I can say those 5 games on any weekend or in a month, I will probably play or be totally willing to play any of those 5 games. How many games do I have access to? More than that. But currently actively playing, I would say I'm probably playing 5 games right now.
Mm-hmm.
That are like tabletop RPGs type games. So I want to know how many games you guys are playing. I'm going to throw that up at jadedgamercast.com. You guys can answer and we'll get an idea of how many games you guys are currently playing. Holy, this show went, man. There was a lot of people throwing some questions out there.
Yeah, jumping into it.
Do you have anything for something shiny?
No. I was going to say, I already talked about Provocon and
Wild
West Exodus and all that shit, so.
I was going to make a comment about some TV shows that I'm currently watching, but I think I might just save that for another day. Because we just finished watching Fear the Walking Dead, the second episode.
Mm-hmm.
And it's interesting. It's pretty good so far, for the most part. But like they're doing this really weird thing where like they've put the first 2 episodes out and then they're like, and then we're going to take a week long break. And then in 2 weeks from now, you'll get the 3rd episode. And I'm like, what the fuck? Like what? You're only 2 episodes in, man.
Right.
It's somewhat bizarre, but, that's what they're going to end up doing. So I don't know. We might talk about that once we actually get into a couple more episodes, but hey, there you have it. That has been Jaded Gamercast for this week. My name is Lang.
I'm Nathan.
Have a good one.
Cheers.